Blog Talk Radio.
What up, everybody? It's Lee from Me and Keys Real Talk Radio. Oh, man, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Had a very eventful UFC 269 pay-per-view over the weekend. We saw Charles Oliveira retain his belt via chokeout, via submission in the second round against Dustin Poirier. He probably had the upset of the year. Juliana Pena submits the GOAT, Amanda Nunes, in the second round. We had Cody Garbrandt get knocked out of his flyweight debut. We had a very action-packed fight between Dominique Cruz and Pedro Munhoz. We saw Sean O'Malley once again finish his opponent. So it was a great weekend. A lot of stuff happened this weekend. But let me introduce my co-host. What's up, Keys, man? What's going on with you?
Yo. You out here? That event was, and I'm gonna just come right out. I'm not gonna waste any time. That was my favorite card of the year, definitely, and probably by far too. I don't even think there's a close second. I started watching that fight at the very first fight when, y'all know I'm a big fan of Jillian Robertson, so she was the first fight of the night on the 6 o'clock card. I was watching. I had the fight's up at 6 o'clock sharp. I watched it. She kicked off the night great with a finish, and the card was just amazing all the way through. I thought it was absolutely incredible. So very happy with that.
Yeah, man. Well, let's jump into it, man. What was your fight of the night?
Let's see. I mean, Oliveira and Poirier was pretty good. I'd say probably Pedro and Cruz. I think that was probably my fight of the night. I think that was probably the best back and forth, in my opinion. And I'm happy to say that because I'm pretty sure when you asked me last week which fight I'd be looking out for, I said that fight was the one I was looking out for. So yeah, and I think they got a fight of the night bonus too, which was well deserved. That was fight of the night. Cruz, you know, a lot of people were saying that was a vintage Cruz performance. You know, they said it was vintage Cruz. I mean, I didn't see, you know, the vintage Cruz days, but I can say this: that was a great example of coming back from adversity. And Cruz is a true champion. You know, even if he's not the champion, he is a champion at heart. And he showed that in that fight. You know, he got knocked down in the first round. A lot of people thought that, you know, you could tell the commentary thought that fight was over right there. They thought he was down and out. I think the arena thought it was over. But it wasn't. You know, he came back. You know, he was moving around. He was doing enough on the ground so that, you know, the ref didn't stop it. And basically, you know, he had the tough first round and then pretty much dominated the second and third round, in my opinion. And he won, you know, a very fair unanimous decision. You know, I think that was a very clear win, 2-1. And yeah, that was epic.
Yeah, I thought I had Cruz losing rounds one. I had him losing round one, then I had him winning rounds two and three. But you know, Munhoz, he looked very good. He looked game. He looked good. But, you know, Cruz is just a veteran, and his style is something that, you know, that it's kind of, he don't take a lot of punishment. And once you let him get into his groove, he's going to just be moving and moving and moving and hitting you and moving and moving. And I think that's what happened with Munhoz. But I'm going to go with the fight right after that, man. I'm going with Josh Emmett and Dan Ige, man. I thought that was a hell of a fight. I think one of the judges had it 30-27. I thought Ige definitely won the second round in that fight. But they had a lot of good exchanges, a lot of good back and forth, Both guys are very game. Neither one of them, you know, backed down, kept coming forward. They were both taking shots. I personally had Ige winning the fight because I thought round one was super close. But, hey, when there's a fight that close, you know, really you can't really argue with the judges if it's that close. But Ige and Emmett, definitely a good fight. Definitely worthy of the position they had on the card, being a prelim main event. Those guys put in work.
Yeah, that was definitely that was a great back and forth too. Shout out to I want to say they gave Emmett the decision, didn't they?
Yeah, Emmett won the unanimous decision.
Right, so they, shout out to Dan.
My only problem was one of the judges had a 30-27. I was like, I don't know about that. I thought Ige at least won one round. I know I had him winning round two.
Yeah, I don't know about a 30-27, beloved. But, you know, we already know that, you know, these judges that they pick from, you know, these state commissions are all you know, mostly very suspect, so. You know, I'm not surprised by that. There's at least one, you know, if not two, very suspect scorecards, you know, every single card nowadays. You know, there's at least one, you know, judge that has like a what? Like, what did he, how did they have it? Kind of moment, you know, at least for me. There's at least one fight where I'm like, yo, how did he have it? How did he score the fight like that? You know what I mean? So, and it was the same thing with Cruz's fight. You know, people online were trying to say that, and I'm going to really argue y'all on this point because we're not doing this. People online were really trying to say that, you know, they had Munhoz winning 10-8 in the first round. And I was like, well, I completely disagree with that. I don't think that's a 10-8. I don't think that's a 10-8 round because what y'all like to do, and this has been a trend, you know, in the past year or two with the UFC as well, is they just love to call rounds 10-8. Like, I feel like the 10-8 round has been used pretty loosely in the past year or two, and they just want to call anything a 10-8. And it's like, if I recall, that was actually a good back-and-forth round. It wasn't like Munhoz dominated the entire round. He knocked Cruz down, I think, twice in the round. Yeah, he had those were big moments. But overall, I don't see that as a 10-8. 10-8 is when, you know, you have a guy like Khabib. Yeah, you 10-8 is when you have like a Curtis Blaydes or you know, a Curtis Blaydes style fight or Khabib style fight where you pretty much see them take a guy down and just hammering the dude with strikes for the entire round and he doesn't even get up. That is like an example of a 10-8 for me because it's a complete domination. It's a complete one-sided round. That is what makes a 10-8, not a round that was actually a pretty good back and forth. Cruz had great footwork in that round, great head movement in that round, and he just got caught. That was what it was. But if you really look at it, the striking exchanges were, it was competitive. So we're not doing that. All right. We're calling that first round a 10-8 for Munhoz. It was a 10-9 for Munhoz. That's what I called it. And then two 10-9s for Cruz, you know, for the next two rounds. But we're not doing that.
Hey, you know what, Keys? On that note, let me ask you a question. Because somebody asked me it. I really didn't know how to answer it. I was at the bar Saturday. I was sitting at a table. Had a nice little table right in front of the TV by myself. And this guy, he was sitting at another table. He was like, hey, man, why don't they ever score rounds 9-9? I was like, man, I don't know. I think they have to have a definitive winner in every round. But he was like, sometimes you look at these fights that it's an even round. It was like nobody really dominated. You know, I was like, man, I was like, the UFC scoring is either 10-9 or 10-8, depending on, you know, whether or not the referee takes a point away or something like that. I was like, but a 9-9 would be very interesting. I think you'll have a lot of draws that way. And I think the UFC don't want draws. That's why you don't have 9-9 rounds. How you feel about that? Do you feel about 9-9 rounds? You think we should have more of those, or it's good that there aren't 9-9 rounds? How you feel?
I mean, there are some cases where you have a 9-9 round. I mean, for example, when I'm pretty sure there was a 9-9 in, I want to say, Figueiredo and Moreno's first fight, and that was part of the reason why the fight ended up being a draw. I think they had it a draw, right? And I think it was because there was a 9-9 round, and that was because there was like a point deduction. Like, it was, you know, you have a 10-9 for one guy or girl, you have a 10-9, and then, you know, something happens where they end up getting a point deducted from the 10-9, then you have a 9-9 round. In that case, where that was the title fight, I mean, I don't really know. That's kind of up to you what you feel about that. I mean, that pretty much made Figueiredo and Moreno's whole thing that they have going here, like, seem more competitive. I think that's one thing that kind of got lost with that 9-9. I think that particular one is kind of a bad example of a 9-9, because that, I think that kind of made, you know, made the UFC feel like that these fights have been more competitive between the two of them, which I thought Moreno won 4 out of 5 of those rounds in the first fight, but that's neither here nor there. You see the 9-9 used in fights like that, and you know where I you don't see it too much. And I think it's, you know, probably because of what you, you know, what you said, that they try to have a definitive winner of the rounds, unless there's something like that where it's like, oh, there's a point deduction because of like an eye poke, or, you know, something that was a blatant foul, you know, something like this. The most place I see 9-9s is in the UFC video game. That's where you really see a 9-9, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, and actually, in that Figueiredo Moreno fight, I don't even know how they scored that 9-9, because even with the point taken away from Figueiredo, Moreno still won the round. That should have been a 10-8 round for Moreno. He should have won the fight that night. But I agree with you, man. I think I'm not a fan of draws. I want a winner at the end of the fight. You might not agree with the winner, you know, but I'd rather have a winner at the end of each fight. But let's talk about this, man. Before we jump into we're gonna talk about a couple things before we get into the co-main and the main event. Garbrandt, man. Talk to me about Garbrandt. I'm going to ask you a question, Keith. Was his title win over Dominique Cruz a fluke? And where do we see Cody Garbrandt going from here?
I mean, I feel like a lot of people will say it was a fluke at this point, but I don't particularly think that it was a fluke. The reason why I say that is because I suspect that there's one of two things that happened. Either Cody's chin was very much compromised from the point that he fought TJ and onwards. I think when TJ knocked him out those two fights, and I think really since the first fight when he got knocked out by TJ, I think from that point on, if you notice, his chin he's seemed very chinny since that first time they fought. It seems like every time he gets tapped on the chin, he goes down right away. And, you know, you could say, oh, it's a technical mistake, you know, boxing defense. Yeah, it is. But if you notice, compared to those other fights, he really wasn't getting hit as much. you know, when he's fighting, you know, Takaya Mitsugaki, you know, the fight he fought before Cruz, then when he's fighting Dominic Cruz, he really didn't get hit much by Cruz in that fight. So you really couldn't tell if he was chinny at that time. So it is kind of hard to know when, at what point his chin became compromised. At what point did he, did it start to, you know, the punches start to wear on him? I think it's from the first TJ fight and on, but you could also say that maybe he's always had a weak chin and he just wasn't getting hit as much in the fights prior to the TJ fight and onwards. You know, if you look at it, he started fighting much better competition from TJ and onwards. He's been fighting very high-level guys and a lot of hard-hitting guys, too, if you look at it. The lineup he's fought has been all very hard-hitting guys. So that's another fact. You know, the Dominic Cruz fight, no, I don't think it was a fluke. I think Cody was just – he was fighting a very different style. You know, he wasn't – I feel like his boxing was – was he was a lot more elusive. You know, his head movement was better. His footwork was better. His defense was better. You know, if you look at the Cruz fight, he was just – every time Cruz swung, Cody just wasn't there. You know, he just was always getting out of the way. He was almost fighting like Cruz does, you know. And I think that's kind of what was the difference in that fight, was that Cruz kind of got outdone by somebody who was – pretty much using his style. You know, I feel like Cody kind of absorbed like some energy from Cruz and then almost became him and was able to kind of use the techniques that Cruz uses, like the attributes that he has, and use them against him. And you really haven't seen Cody with that type of footwork and head movement since that fight. So I don't know if it's like a, you know, that leads me to think it's a difference in his trainers. Like, I don't know if he's changed boxing coaches, or if he's moved gyms at all, or if he's spending less time at Alpha Male, or what it is. I don't know what changed from that point to now, but you know, it's definitely, I definitely don't want to see Cody fight for a little bit. I don't know if I want to say he should retire. I mean, I'm not too far from saying I think he should retire, but he's still so young. But I won't say retire just yet, but I will say I do not want to see him, like, booking another fight anytime soon. Like, I definitely think that, you know, he needs to go back and, you know, evaluate some things and, you know, probably take, like, a year off or something. Like I want to see him really take a step back from fighting in the cage, you know, and really look over some things. That's what I think.
I'm going to go with the second thing you said. He may have been chinny the whole time. We just didn't know it until he started fighting top-level guys. I'm not saying Dominic Cruz isn't a top-level guy, but Dominic Cruz just couldn't connect with him. But it's like he can't see hooks, Keys. He don't see hooks coming. Every time he done got knocked out, it's been a hook. There's not been an uppercut. It ain't been a jab. It ain't been a kick. It's been a left or a right hook. 9 times out of 10, most of the time it's been a right hook. I think Kai caught him with a left hook Saturday. But it's like, bro, in your training, you got to defend the hook if that's the punch that you're more susceptible to. I don't see him being a contender again, unless he can, like, really, really, really string together, like, a major win streak. But with the level of competition he's going to be fighting, I don't see it. And it's just – I'm not going to say his win over Dominic Cruz was fluky. I'm going to say a win over Dominic Cruz seems like at the time he was in the right place at the right time. But do you see a correlation between Chris Weidman and Cody Garbrandt? Basically, they both win the belt, and then their careers just go down the shitter after they win the belt. And that's just sad to say, man. It's just sad to say. I definitely call Chris Weidman part of the flukiest UFC champion in history, but I won't say that Cody was got a fluke win over Dominique because he did dominate him. But it's just, man, Cody, you got to defend the left and the right hook, bro. Those are the only punches you don't see coming. You see everything else coming except the hook. And that's just a defensive flaw he got.
I was waiting for you to finish up right there. I didn't know if you were done yet. But I think it's more likely that we just didn't see him. We didn't see anybody catch him up until the point, you know, he fought Cruz, and I feel like his style was just a lot different. The way he was fighting was a lot different. And in his previous fights, I don't think he was fighting guys that, you know, were on the level where they were going to, you know, either A, have enough power, or B, be able to catch him and put him down. So, yeah, I mean, that's probably the case with that. I think that we just didn't see anybody catch him yet. You know, I think he probably had a weak chin the whole time. I don't think he all of a sudden has a weak chin. But, I mean, like I said, too, you could speculate that, you know, ever since TJ knocked him out, you know, it's like since those two pair of fights, he just seemed to be getting caught a lot more often. So there's that possibility, too.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. I totally agree. I thought the Sun Sal fight, I thought that was a perfect matchup for him because of Sun Sal. He isn't known for his quickness. He's known for being methodical in the octagon. And I thought that fight was a ready-made fight for him to win. And, you know, I think that brought a lot of, you know, rejuvenated Cody fans back out there. But then when you put him in there against top-notch guys, man, he seemed to get slept. So, real quick, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you grade Sean O'Malley's fight?
I mean, the fight overall was pretty much what you figure he'd go in there and do that. So, I mean, the fight overall is not going to get a high rating from me. It wasn't really much of a fight. He kind of just knocked the dude out in like little to no time, and that was cool. I mean, I think what you're more asking is, what do you rate his performance? I think that's what you're more trying to ask. And I mean, it was good. I mean, I definitely thought that, you know, it was kind of crazy the way the mode that he went into when he realized that Holyon was hurt. Like, the way he was swinging at him was like ferocious. Like, he really went into a kill mode, and it was kind of scary. Like, the way he hit Holyon with so many shots, all different types of angles. Like, this dude O'Malley was throwing uppercut, dude, left and right, bro. He might even have some knees in there. I don't know. He was swinging so fast and hitting Holyon with so many shots when he was covering up against the cage. Like, go back and look at the footage. He was hitting him with lefts, rights, and uppercuts, like, all mixed in. He was going to the body and the head kind of switching off. Oh, my goodness. I was like, wow. I am glad that the first thought that I had when that stoppage happened was, I'm really glad that we are likely not going to see Cody versus O'Malley. I'm just really glad that we're not going to see that fight, because, you know, that's probably the worst possible matchup for Cody at this point in his career. Like, not to say that he's late in his career, but just the way that he has looked so chinny and has just been getting caught by everybody. Like, I don't want to see him fight O'Malley, man. I just think O'Malley would just dissect him, and just, like, we would see Cody just get obliterated, you know. It would just be really bad. I don't even think that's, like, I don't even think that could be called a hot take. I feel like we can all agree on that. That's just that's a nightmare matchup for Cody. And I get a lot of love for Cody. You know, he was one of the first, you know, when I came back to the UFC that really like caught my eye, and I was like, damn, I'm a fan of this dude. Like, this is inspiring right now. This is like an underdog story, you know. But I got to look out too. I got to be honest and be objective and just say like, yo, that's not a good fight for you. Like, I like the trash talk back and forth, but like, let's just not run that fight ever, because that's just O'Malley was, he was in kill mode, man. He was absolutely in kill mode, and I'm glad that he's ranked now. He's ranked. I don't know if you saw it, but he's ranked number 13 now in the bantamweight rankings. No, they got him in the rankings, so that it's safe to say that. It's safe to say that. I mean, more likely than not, his next fight will be against a top 15 guy. But you know, sometimes when you're that low in the rankings, they might give you like, and I do see this happen quite often, is someone that's like 14, 15. You know, he's 13, so he's kind of like at the bottom of the top 15. Sometimes they'll give him like, they'll give those guys like someone that's right on the cusp of the rankings, like kind of like when, kind of like when they had Habib 2.0. What's his name there? In the 155 class, the new Habib. They had him fight that blonde surfer dude. What's that dude's name? The blonde surfer dude. He looks like he'd be like modeling for Hollister or something. Abercrombie and Fitch. What's that dude's name? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to look it up now.
The dude looks like he'd be like a, you know, like a model for like a something like that. He kind of like that pretty boy look. I'm trying to think of his name, but they had
No more.
What's his name?
I don't think he ranked anymore.
Yeah, he's not ranked, but I'm saying that I'm pretty sure Huh?
I can't think of that guy's name. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, it's I think he has like the first letter of his first and last name is the same letter. I can't think of his name. It's slipped my mind, but it was one of Islam's last like two or three fights. He fought that dude, and I'm pretty sure that like
Dover.
Islam might have been, who is it?
Lou Dover.
Okay, yeah. See what I mean? The first, I knew it was the first and last name had the same first letter. Jude Dober, yeah, that dude. No disrespect to Jude Dober. He kind of looks like he'd be like a model for Hollister, like Abercrombie and Fitch. I mean, I'm just being honest. I think he knows that too. He probably might have even modeled for them before, so that might just be me talking about his career. So that's no disrespect. But yeah, I think they had Islam when he was right on like the cusp of the top 15. They had him fight Jude Dober, who was also on the cusp of the top 15. So it's possible they could give O'Malley someone who's like someone like a Jude Dober to the 135s, like someone who's like right there. And I believe someone like that would be Brian Kelleher. I think Brian Kelleher, I think that they will give him for his next fight. And I don't think Kelleher is ranked, but he's one of those guys. He might be ranked. I'm not sure. Brian Kelleher might be ranked because he's on a win streak. Right. But he's on a win streak, and if you had to guess, you'd probably put him like somewhere just outside the top 15 if you had to, you know. So
I think they're gonna roll with Cody Stamann. I think they're gonna try to match up Cody Stamann and Sean O'Malley. Stamann is number 15. O'Malley is number 13. But did you see on Twitter Saturday night, our boy called him out? Our boy Marab called out Sean O'Malley.
Oh, man. Nah, I did see it, but nah, Marab, you – I mean, first of all, I want a bigger fight for Marab. I mean, I'll take it. You know, Marab can fight him, but, man, I don't think O'Malley wants to fight Marab, dog. I don't think if I'm O'Malley, I'm ducking that matchup, bro. I'm gonna just try to slide smooth out the way of that fight. I think, you know, we could probably agree on that. That's probably not the best fight for the fight.
Oh yeah, I replied to the tweet. I was like, O'Malley don't want that smoke. That's exactly what I retweeted. I was like, he don't want that smoke. But, yeah, but Rab called him out on Twitter on Saturday. Actually, man, I got to say, man, Saturday was so much fun tweeting, dog. I had a good time tweeting and replying to tweets on Saturday. I want to say we got, like, 5 new followers Saturday, you know, from us tweeting. Well, my man Key said he was off the tequila on Saturday, so. But.
Wait, what did I say?
Remember you was like, bro, I'm off the tequila.
Oh, I was, bro. I was. I was tipping heavy, man. I was your boy Keys was waved out during that card, bro. I was waved out. I 6 o'clock. I didn't start drinking until like right around the cruise fight. I think it was like right when the cruise fight started was when I was like, all right, this is the co-main event, the prelims. I was like, let me pour up a drink right now, and that was where that was at. But from that point, I was waved out, man. I was having some tequila and cranberry. That was perfect. I had off the Blanco, you know, be off the Blanco, it was perfect with that, you know. Got some Milagro, you know, the blue bottle, the Blanco, tequila. Yeah, we were doing it, and that with the cranberry was perfect. And yeah, I was waved out. It was, you know, by the time, yeah, I almost started falling asleep, man. My boy was like, yo. You can't fall asleep. Like, it was like the last three fights. I started fading, you know. But, you know, I wasn't really going to fall asleep. I was just resting my eyes.
Yeah, that's what we all say when we fall asleep. But, yeah, man. But I'm going to say O'Malley, it was a good performance by him. He's ranked now. I thought he definitely put together about a 15-punch combination that if the referee would have stopped there at any time, I wouldn't have been mad. I thought when he hit my man with that uppercut, I thought the fight should have been ended then. But, you know, let's see what the UFC do with his matchmaking now. He's number 13. I think they get him Cody Stamann. And plus, O'Malley has been basically sticking to his guns about he's not going to fight any big-time fights until they show him some big-time money. So we shall see what happens.
Go ahead.
And, you know, in a way, I kind of sort of understand what he's saying, but at the same time, it's like, are you really a draw? You know, when you become a draw, that's when you basically start making money. Me personally, and you also, I thought his fight should have been on the prelims, maybe the main event on the prelims. There's no way I thought that fight should have been on the main card. So, but the UFC, I guess they got a plan for him. But their plan don't seem to be matching up with his plan. Because his plan is, I'm not going to fight no big names until y'all give me big dollars.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, I just got to say it again because I think I should be one of the matchmakers, man. I think me and you should be matchmakers. I think so, yes. Because how many times have we called the matchups that they ended up making? So many times. And Cody Stamann is a name that I've been calling for to fight O'Malley for like over a year now. And I mean, Stamann, like after we were calling for him to fight him, started to actually call out O'Malley. And I was like, okay, he's reaching for that fight. But O'Malley's saying he's the unranked champ. So he has no intention of fighting ranked. But now that they placed him in the rankings, I figured Dana White is writing him up a ranked contract. Is writing him up a ranked contract to, you know, maybe a 3-fight contract or something like that to at least fight, you know, guys that are, you know, ranked like 9 to 15, you know, like the first half of the top 15. You know, I would think that they would give him something like that because, I mean, unless, because Dana probably doesn't want to offer him. You know, he was just saying the other day that he doesn't think O'Malley is, you know, on the level of Chimaev, a guy like that, where you can just, like, put him against the top guys. He wants to kind of move him along slowly, which, you know, when you look at some of the guys that they've pushed along too quick recently, it kind of makes sense that he's moving like that. You know, Johnny Walker was rushed along too quick. Who's that other dude? Looks like he's from Grand Theft Auto. Vulcan. Vulcan Ofstamir kind of looks like a Grand Theft Auto character to me. And he was rushed to the top as well. And that didn't work out. You know, he went to go fight DC and he got dominated. And he's pretty much lost. Like, he's been kind of, he's almost like gatekeeper status now. He's lost a lot of fights since then. And Johnny Walker's lost a good handful of fights since then, both of them. So you just look at guys like that, and it makes sense. You know, I understand why Dana doesn't want to rush O'Malley, you know, into the fire. And 135 is such a stacked division that, like, even with the top half of the top 15, like, you're going from what, number 9 ranked, or, you know, number 8 ranked to 15. Like, even looking at who's in there, like, you have killers in there. Like, it's kind of hard to at this point, like, if O'Malley's going to be ranked, like, he's going to have a hard matchup every fight. Like, if who can you really put him against in the top 15 at 135 that's not a killer? Like, who is not a threat that is in the top 15? Like, besides if, like, Marlon Moraes is in there. Because I think that O'Malley would start Marlon Moraes. Like, Marlon Moraes just hasn't. He was on a tear for a while, but then he's really fell off recently, and his gas tank is just clearly, you know, he's kind of like Chandler. Like, it's very clear that he comes with, like, 1, maybe 2 rounds, and then he's gassed. And I think O'Malley would just outpace him and just have come with too much volume. But besides a guy like that, who can he really fight? And then maybe Frankie, but Frankie, like, you shouldn't be fighting him anyway. I think they should. I don't even know for Frankie, but besides those two guys, if they're in the top 15, who else is in there that's not a killer? Do you have an answer to that?
I wouldn't put him against Marlon Moraes, and I probably would put him against Frankie Edgar. I wouldn't put him against Rafael Sunsal. I would look at Cody Stamann. Maybe Song Yeon Dong, somebody that's tough, but I don't think Song Yeon Dong can hang with him. But Pedro Munhoz is ranked number 10. I don't know.
All right. Well, you're saying you don't think Song Yeon Dong could hang with O'Malley?
Nah.
Song Yeon Dong is pretty good.
He's tough. He's really, really tough. But I don't see him making it, giving him a fight. I see him giving him a tough fight, but as far as a fight, I don't know. So
I see what you're saying. What about this fight? Is Jimmy Rivera ranked?
No, he isn't. But
okay,
he's probably right outside of the top 15.
Yeah, so that would actually make perfect sense. If what I was trying to say about those guys that you would think are right outside of the top 15, like, that's kind of like a high profile fight for O'Malley, a Jimmy Rivera. Like, that'd be by far the biggest name that he's fought. So I don't know what they want to do. If they want to give him a guy that's in the top 15, are they going to go with some? I think they're going to still go with someone who's either they'll give him like number 15, or they'll give him someone that's like at the cusp of the rankings, like Brian Kelleher or a Jimmy Rivera. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah. Jimmy Rivera, I think that'll be a tough fight. I think Brian Kelleher will be a tough fight. I think Pedro Munhoz will be a tough fight. I think Cody Stamann will be a tough fight. So, you know, we'll see how they go about it, but I think he gets one more cupcake fight, though. I think he gets one more cupcake fight, and then he gets a real fight. Okay. What else I want to ask
they could,
you about?
They could put him in there with Ricky Simon.
He a hard hitter.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it. I mean, this MMA World Rankings, oh, no, RankingMMA.com, it looks like they moved Holyon. Oh, yeah, Adrian Yanez. He's talked about fighting Adrian Yanez. And Yanez has, like, been looking really good, and he's not ranked either. See, this is what I mean. I think there's a lot of guys in this division that are unranked that are actually really good. That's the crazy part. Like, you got – I didn't even know Saeed Nurmagomedov was unranked, and he's here. Brian Kelleher here. Montel Jackson is here. Adrian Yanez. Like, I just think there's a lot of guys. Wait, this site doesn't even have Cody Stamann ranked. They might have it wrong, I think.
Yeah, I was on the UFC.com, and they got Cody Stamann ranked number 15.
All right, so I don't think this site has it right, but either way, all those guys are there, and I know O'Malley might try to fight Adrian Yanez because I know he's unranked 135, but he's been knocking dudes out left and right. It's not like he's a bum. Like, and that would be – I think that would actually be a banger of a fight, but if we're going to put him against someone in the top 15, I mean, hold on. I want to try to get a pick. I want to give a pick for who I want him to fight. See, they probably don't want to give him – he's not getting a top five guy. Merab is number six. I think Merab would maul him, so we're not going to do that. Cruz has moved up two spots to number seven. Okay, Cruz is – I love that. Two-fight win streak, Cruz. Let's go, baby. Marlon Vera, I still think he needs to get that win back. A lot of people don't seem to be talking about it, but I think he needs to get that back. But they probably won't want to run that yet. Marlon Moraes is there. We're not going to do that. Munhoz is there. Not Frankie, not Sun Tzu. Sonya Don, Cody Stamann. So Stamann's number 15. I'd probably say it would make the most sense with the rankings to either give him, I'd say either Cody Stamann or Pedro Munhoz, because Munhoz has moved down to 10.
But as a name that you just said that sparked my interest and made my ears go up, Dominique Cruz versus Sean O'Malley. I really, really like that fight. I really, really like that fight because Dominique Cruz is hard to punch. His style is very unorthodox. Man, I'm very, very, very – that fight intrigues me. Intrigues me. But all right, man, let's jump into it, man. Probably the biggest upset of 2021, we had Juliana Pena submit the GOAT, Amanda Nunes. The first round, I thought Amanda Nunes did what she was supposed to do. She came out. You know, she fought with a deliberate pace. You know, kept her distance, used a jab. And then in the second round, I don't know what the hell happened that made her fight the style of fight that she was using. That made no sense to me at all. But we got a new bantamweight women's champion, Juliana Pena. Your thoughts on the fight Saturday?
I mean, we all have our own perspective, but I don't really think this was a case of Nunez had a bad night, and that's why Pena had a good night. I don't think that is what happened here. I think Pena just was better on the night. I think that is what happened. And Nunez, you know, yeah, she may have, you know, switched up her game plan, you know, round one to round two. I don't really remember exactly how the fight went because I was just kind of – I was really watching Pena. I was rooting for Pena because I just really – I personally am kind of sick of Nunez kind of like holding up all the belts. So I was really rooting for Pena. I predicted Nunez because it's hard to, you know, go against Nunez. But realistically, I was just really I was like, yo, I'd love to see Pena win. And so I was really watching what she was doing more than I was watching Nunez, so I can't speak for her strategy. But I will not say, like, Nunez had a bad night and made Pena, like, look good. Because Pena had a great night, and I think this is what happened, is that Nunez is used to walking these girls down. She is used to feeling the fear in her opponents. She knows that her opponents are afraid of her power. You know, she knows that. She knows how dominant she was. She knows that she kind of almost has, you know, started to have this aura around her, you know, and her opponents can feel that. You know, she won so many fights, defended her belts like 8 times combined or something like that. And I think she finally fought someone who was not afraid, you know, someone who would come forward, take her big shots, and then instead of taking her big shots and kind of retreating or – you can see they're hurt, and Nunez kind of walks them down, is she was welcoming the shots and then throwing counter shots right back. That was the difference with Pena. Nunez is not used to her opponents doing that to her. She's not used to having – I didn't see Nunez in – you know, there's certain fights I didn't see. I didn't see the Pennington fight. But Nunez generally is used to her opponents being afraid of her power. And they could feel her aura. And I think this was the first time that she fought someone who genuinely didn't care about who she was. You know, I think Pena fought her as if she was just another fight. She did not fight her as the GOAT. You know, I don't think Pena, and I think that helped her. You know, that helped her to get the win. And, you know, she came forward. She took Nunez's shots and then threw shots right back. And you could see Nunez was shocked by that. She got hit with the shots. You could tell she was hurt. She was very surprised, I think, how Pena was, you know, welcoming the striking exchanges in that second round. So that's what I thought about that fight. Very proud of Pena and happy to see her win the belt. I think she came in with the right mindset, and that mindset helped her to get it done in the fight. So props to her.
Bro, when I saw the beginning of the second round, I was like, no, this can't be the strategy. Why is Amanda taking part in a quote-unquote slugfest? This is not her style of fight. And at first, I was sitting there watching it, and I'm like, well, Juliana really isn't touching her the way I thought she would. But at the same time, we all know that Amanda has cardio issues. And it seems to me like she kind of swung herself out in that second round trying to keep up with Juliana. My whole thing was, Amanda, stay at distance. Make her come to you. You use less energy. And she has to basically play defense while trying to become an offensive threat. Amanda never once tried to take her down, except in the first round. And it just, I'm not going to say she had an off night. I'm going to say Juliana made her have an off night. Juliana is, you know, she's the champ right now. But can she defend it? We shall see. We shall see. Man.
I just want.
Go ahead.
What happened?
Go ahead.
I just want to put this out there. Two things. I think this is kind of crazy. Well, one is that I guess they extended Nate Diaz's contract, so his next fight will not be his last UFC fight. And two is Bellator Dublin. It's going to be Gegard Mousasi versus Austin Vanderfoot, Paige Van Zandt's husband. I didn't know he was up there for the title. I knew he was on a win streak, but I don't even think I knew he was in the same division as Gegard. So that's pretty dope. I like seeing him going up for the belt. That's pretty dope. I just wanted to throw that out there. We don't even got to discuss it, but I just kind of wanted to shout those things out.
I don't know, Keys. I don't know, man. I don't know. Damn, you stumped me on that, bro. I don't have no comeback on that. Damn.
That's all right. You know, I was just really trying to shout those things. I wasn't even trying to, you know, trying to get into it. It's all good because we got to get into the main event anyways for 269. But we can talk about those, you know, on the next one.
Okay.
We got time to talk about those. You know, those are kind of like long-term, you know, discussions.
Yeah. But before we jump into the main event, I think me and you call this after Rose's last fight. You know, the UFC, I had heard on Unlocking the Cage where the UFC didn't want Carlin sponsor the fight, Rose Namajunas, but the champ said that's the only fight she want. And me and you was calling for that fight, and look what happens, bro. Rose is calling for the fight.
Yeah, so it looks like now, you know, Rose is going in trying to get that fight, and you see Carla going in trying to get that fight. So they're both calling for it. I was just kind of confused because then I saw, Zhang Wiley was coming out saying that she expects to fight Carla Esparza in 2022, and I'm like, Zhang Wiley, I'm sorry, but didn't you just lose fighting for the belt twice? Like, didn't you just lose two times to Rose? Like, how? So now you expect Carla Esparza, who's on a win streak, who clearly needs to fight for the title now. There's really, you basically expect to get, like, a title eliminator fight against Esparza and to try to, like, roadblock her from getting the title. It's like, nah, man, we not doing that. They better not do that. They better not do that because we all know the true fight is the rematch, and Rose got to fight Carla Esparza, and they're both calling for it. So Dana White got to just do the right thing and book that fight ASAP and don't even try to play and say that Zhang Wiley is going to fight Esparza. I hope that's not on the table because that sounds like bogus to me, man. She lost twice. We got to stop playing. Like, I know the UFC wants to just run the same matchups over and over again and just – they want everything to be a trilogy nowadays, but y'all need to chill out, man. Just let it go. Let's do a fresh matchup and keep it moving.
And plus, a trilogy fight should only happen if it's one apiece. Rose knocked her out in the first fight, in the first round, and then she basically dominated her in the second fight, although some people was claiming that Wiley won the fight. I didn't see it that way. I thought Rose Namajunas definitely won round 4 and 5. So, but speaking of respect and putting some respect on people's name, can people start putting some respect on Charles Oliveira's name? A lot of y'all out there view Dustin Poirier as the uncrowned champ. I didn't. My man Keys didn't. A lot of y'all said that it was just a formality before Dustin would go in there and take the belt from Oliveira. Me and Keys both didn't see it that way. please put some respect on the champ's name. What was your thoughts on the main event, Keys?
I mean, the main event, I think we called it, okay, months ago we called it, and we both said that we thought it was funny that everybody was doubting Charles Oliveira. Everybody was saying, you know, all the major MMA media, you know, Bisping, everybody, you know, saying that they had Poirier winning and, you know, really just not giving Charles any credit. And one thing we said was, it's funny how everybody is doubting Oliveira except Poirier. He's the only one. Because, look, we said the fans can't fight for you. Floyd Mayweather said that leading up to the McGregor fight. You know, the whole crowd can roar for McGregor, but the fans can't fight for you. And that's facts. And that was the way, you know, not the same thing, but that was similar to this. Everybody was raving about Poirier, but guess what? The fans can't fight for you. Poirier needs to go in there and fight. And one thing Poirier does know, because he's a true man, he's an honest guy, he knew the threat that Oliveira was. He knew that it wasn't a sure shot that he would win that fight. He knew there was a chance he could lose, you know, because he's an honest guy. He keeps it real. And then they go in there, and people saw that upset. You know, you had the underdog come out, and Oliveira looked great, and he got Poirier out of there, I want to say, in the third round, and that's just what it was. People, you know, need to learn that you got to actually watch fights. You can't just go with the hype of what, you know, the media says and, you know, everything else, you know, what the consensus is, because Oliveira was being doubted. Oliveira was being doubted in that fight way too heavily. There was no reason why, you know, it should have been all about Poirier, and, you know, they're doing a whole, you know, media run about Poirier, and there's really nothing about Oliveira. Like, you could tell that the organization wanted Poirier to win that. You know, I feel like that was very clear. But they didn't get it, and that's what you get. You know what I'm saying? Y'all got to really watch fights. And you could tell that the odds makers don't watch fights. You could tell the odds makers don't watch fights because that fight should have been a pick'em. That's what it should have been. I think it should have been a pick'em because both of those guys had the ability to defeat each other. And they both had things that they were really great at, you know. But I think the better man overall won that night. And I was so proud. You know, I was so proud. Now, I feel for Poirier because he's one of my favorites too. You know, that must be, you know, heartbreaking to, you know, get close to the title twice and you lose in the same fashion in both attempts. You know, that's heartbreaking. You know, I want to see him win the belt. But, you know, Oliveira's my guy too. You know, I called the shot on Oliveira, you know, the day that Gaethje lost fighting for the title. I said, Oliveira's going to be that guy. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be a world champion very soon, you know, because he's the best guy. He's a sleeper in the division. I think he was ranked number 6 at that time. I was like, he's the sleeper. No one's talking about him. It's just like Benil Dariush. No one's talking about Dariush right now. He's another sleeper in the division. Watch him come up. Watch how they won't talk about him, and he'll stop beating some of these guys. So, yeah, that's what I thought. Oliveira looked incredible. I thought he proved it once again, and these doubters are going to become believers.
I text my man Keys at 10:30 on Saturday, and this is what I text him. I don't like the way Oliveira is fighting early in this fight. Poirier has landed too many clean shots. Poirier came out in the first round, and he was landing some shots. So I was like, whoa, yo, my man Charles can't take too many. I was like, he can't be taking these the whole fight. And they went in between rounds. Oliveira made an adjustment, decided to grapple. And once he got Poirier's back, the guy that was sitting beside me, I said, bro, it's over. He was like, nah, man, nah, it ain't. I was like, bro, it's over. I was like, when he got that first underhook in, I said, it's over, man. It's only a matter of time. He's making Poirier carry his weight. he's making Poirier defend every submission from the top. I was like, yeah, it's over. Lo and behold, locked in the rear naked. And then the way he locked in the rear naked, he faked down Poirier out. He faked Poirier out as if he was gonna take the choke from under his neck. And Poirier paused for one split second, gave him time enough to adjust his hands, and it was all over. Oliveira has done a good job as far as matching his limited striking game with his superior jiu-jitsu game, and it's a marriage made in heaven, because now you have to respect his hands and you have to respect him when he's on the mat. I tweeted out that it was probably a little controversial, but if Khabib was still the champ, when he tried to fight the same style of fight he used against Justin Gaethje, Conor McGregor, Justin Poirier, when he tried to use that same style against Charles Oliveira, I say hell no, because Oliveira would dominate him on the mat. So I don't know how Khabib would beat Oliveira if he couldn't take him down. So good win by Oliveira, good title defense. I expect Dustin Poirier to go home, take some time. I expect Gaethje to be next up Oliveira. So we'll see how it shakes out in the next couple of weeks. But Oliveira right now is and still undisputed. So all those ones that was hating on him going into the fight, saying that there was no way he could share the same octagon as Poirier, he proved y'all wrong. He proved y'all wrong against Chandler. And if he gets to fight Gaethje, I think the same thing happens to Gaethje that happened to Poirier. He gets submitted.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be upset, man. I think Oliveira is going to beat, you know, most of your favorites. You know, he's going to beat all these dudes. And there's only two guys that I think are even going to – that even have a chance against him right now. And they're fighting each other coming up in the next, like, month or two. They're going to be fighting one another. So I think it's really those two guys are really the only ones that, have a chance at becoming the champion. I think Gaethje loses pretty easily. I feel like Poirier is like a couple notches better than Gaethje. So, you know, I think Oliveira beats him. I think he beats McGregor. He beats Ferguson again. And yeah, there's really, I think Islam and Beneil Dariush are the only guys I see giving Oliveira, you know, a test right now. I think these other guys, like, they'll put up a fight, but I just don't see any of them beating Oliveira like they think they can. They all think that he's such an easy win, which is what's so confusing, because he's beaten Kevin Lee, Tony Ferguson, Michael Chandler, and Dustin Poirier in his last four fights, and somehow he's an easy fight. I just don't understand. Like, he's dominating everybody. You know, he finished 3 out of 4 of those guys I just named off. And really, Ferguson is the only guy, someone said this on Twitter, Ferguson's the only guy to go a full 3 rounds with Oliveira. Ferguson made it the longest against Oliveira. Everybody else was finished before that could happen. So it is what it is. You know, they're just going to keep doubting, and he's going to just beat everybody's favorites. That's what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, I think definitely the next fight for him is Gaethje. Poirier takes some time off, but I'm guessing that Poirier being there in the summertime, fighting Michael Chandler. So, hey, more power to him trying to get back in the title shot. But, hey, another good show. We talked about a lot tonight. Any last words for the people?
I'll say last words. I heard some rumblings of Diaz versus Ferguson being the next fight. I'll just say I love that fight. And if y'all want to put that together, I welcome it. And second is thank y'all for listening. Like I always say, you can add us on Twitter and we'll get chat there, hop in, talk with us, or if you want to just throw up some topics you want us to talk about or you have questions, we can answer them live on the show. So just let us know. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. Hope you all enjoyed UFC 269. It was my favorite card of 2021 so far. I don't think there'll be one to top it, but it is what it is. And, yeah, just have a great rest of y'all week. And, yeah, so that's pretty much all I got.
Oh, yeah. My bad, bro. Last words, yeah, I'm good, man. I was coughing. I got a little cold, so I had to mute the phone real quick. But look, to my man Keys, hey, man, have a good rest of the week, bro. I know you're going through some things. I'm here for you. You need somebody to talk to. You know, life throws us curveballs, man, and, you know, I'm here for you if you need me. Everybody take care of each other. Be safe. If you haven't been keeping up with the news, the COVID numbers are spiking again. Practice safe distance, wear your mask. I know all of us are trying to, you know, want to get back to life as soon as possible, but you have to take care of yourself. If you take care of yourself, we can take care of each other. That being said, positive people, positive energy, yeah, positive results. Lee and Key signing off. Everybody have a great, great rest of your week, and we'll talk to y'all next weekend. As always, we end the show with a peace.